right, guys, welcome to a new episode of Saw Something Scary. Jeff Wright, Derek Zhu, back in the studio with you. Jeff, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Man, I'm super happy to be recording a podcast. It's not been the greatest week, and this is one of the highlights, so it's good to be on here talking to you, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I actually got to go home, go to Tennessee over the weekend, and see some family, kind of recharge my batteries. So trying to get acclimated back to the real world. But besides that, man, things are good. Things are good, and I'm excited to talk to you about a movie with Sam Rockwell in it.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far ahead of this, but I forgot Jared Harris was in this. I forgot Rosemary DeWitt was in this. Like, there's some hitters.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We'll be talking about Poltergeist, the 2015 version, later on in the show. But right now, let's get to everyone's favorite part of the show.
Jeff hates trailers.
And Jeff, I've got two trailers for you this week. The first one is really kind of, I mean, I'm sure that you're going to watch this anyway, but I was just wondering if you had watched it or not. The trailer for WandaVision came out.
I heard that it was a success, like more people watched it than any other trailer or something, you know, out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I saw a headline along those lines, but I plan to watch the show. And so the whole reason we have the segment is I don't watch trailers if I'm going to watch the show. And I'm going to watch the show. So I didn't watch it. That's the longest possible answer I could give to a simple question.
That's fair. I was curious to see if you'd watched it or not, just because I watched it, man, and it's out there. I'm definitely going to watch it, but I came and I guess that they did their job, because I came out of it with a lot more questions than I had answers. And I guess that's probably what a trailer's supposed to do, you know? But it's interesting. I've been wanting to talk to somebody about it, and I haven't had a chance to talk to anybody about it yet. So I may have to call up our friends at Ramblings from Nowhere and try to talk to them about that.
Well, I can tell you this part, and I don't know what familiarity you have with this, but this is difficult ground for them to walk on, because part of Wanda's character in the comics is that she has pronounced mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently that's a major part of what WandaVision is going to be about. And I really do wonder if there is a possible version of a pop culture franchise that can handle mental illness as a topic that is both careful, caring, well-informed, and entertaining. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think you could get like a couple of those elements, but it's going to be a really hard needle to thread to get all four of those.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it to see if they can. Did you watch Legion? Aubrey Plaza was in it.
I did not. I wanted to, but never had the chance.
Well, I turned on the first episode, and it was super trippy.
Okay.
But I didn't watch it long enough to know, and have they handled this appropriately? I guess is the best term I can think of. I mean, it says something that Marvel is trying to, and I guess Legion maybe was a pilot, you know, I mean, I say a pilot, obviously it has a literal pilot, but sort of a test balloon to see if they can pull it off. We'll see. I don't know that I would want the task of trying to make that show, knowing that all those challenges were in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I'm curious to see how it all plays out and how it all comes together. I am excited that, oh man, what's her name? The lady that plays Jen on Parks and Rec. I forget her name right now. Catherine Hahn. There it is. I'm excited that Catherine Hahn is going to be in a Marvel franchise.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So this is off topic, but it just hit me, and I feel like that we need to talk about it. Dude, I watched all of The Last Dance over the last 2 days.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Let's go.
Yeah. Man, I watched the first episode, I guess it was Sunday night. I was staying with my aunt and uncle, and of course, you know, just because I'm out of work doesn't mean that they're out of work. So they both had to go to bed pretty early. And I was like, man, I don't have anything to do. I'm finally going to sit down and watch at least the first episode. And I watched the first episode, and I felt like John Locke from Lost. I was like, oh, we got to watch that again. And then I just blazed through the other nine, and I got home yesterday and I got home on Tuesday night and watched the last, I think episodes 4 through 9 I watched when I got home. And then I went to watch the 10th episode yesterday and my Netflix had expired. I'd cut my Netflix off and it expired. So you got me, Netflix. I re-upped it just so I could finish this documentary. And I'm glad I did, man. It's amazing.
I am so happy to hear that. I have no stake in that documentary. I just love that era of basketball and love Jordan. I'm not unique in that way, but like that series captures what made me a diehard basketball fan.
Yeah.
And so to hear a friend enjoyed it as well really tickles me. Was there anything that stood out? I just said tickles because I'm an old Southern man. It really tickles me. Anything that particularly stood out that you thought was cool or interesting or shocking?
Not necessarily anything. I guess the biggest thing that shocked me was I didn't remember Pippen like holding out.
Yeah.
And so that kind of got me because to me, like Scottie Pippen is the ultimate team player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jordan was a star, but Pippen was the guy. Pippen was the man behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just kind of threw me for a loop when I found out. Well, also it threw me for a loop when I found out that Pippen was like one of the lowest paid NBA players. I was just like, how can you underpay Scottie Pippen? That doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, see, that's the real problem. Krause comes off as a scumbag villain in that documentary.
Oh, man, does he ever.
And I'm telling you, as a lifelong Bulls fan who has read everything I know of on the Bulls Jordan era, and I mean that literally, like if there's a book out there, I think I've read it. Mm. I think he's absolutely accurately portrayed in the documentary.
Yeah.
He was arrogant and foolish and had such an elevated sense of who he was. But ultimately, the real problem with the Bulls is the owner who employed that guy, signed off on his decisions, and did that stuff. I mean, you know, my mom is the world's biggest Scottie Pippen fan to this day. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff that documentary captures is what my mom was like firing at the Bulls while we were watching those games together.
Yeah.
She knew Pippen came from the dirt. She knew that he had a ton of family to take care of. He had a disabled father. And she at the time was like, this is ridiculous. You don't only negotiate for the best price. When Reinsdorf in that doc says, hey, I told him not to sign the contract. I thought, man, just get out of here with that. Mm-hmm. Get out of here with that. I'm a capitalist. I'm all about like the best exchange rate. I really am. But you don't get to sit there in some kind of moral disconnect looking back on stuff you knew was going on and just lay it on Scottie. This kid who came from nothing, there's no reason to believe Scottie Pippen was sophisticated enough to know how to even hire an agent who could manage his affairs well coming from his background. He just wasn't in that social environment until he became an athletic prodigy. So don't sit there and let yourself off the hook ethically. I can't stand. I mean, as much as I love the Bulls to this day, I love the Bulls. There's something about that image that just gets me fired up and excited. The ownership structure of the Bulls is awful, atrocious in every sense of the word. And I will get off my soapbox now.
No, you're right. And I wish that we had more time to actually talk about a lot more stuff with that documentary, because I know we're kind of pressed for time. But man, I sat there, and for the entire length of the documentary, I just had the dumbest little grin on my. I was 13 again.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
You know, reliving. I was probably a little too young, and probably a little didn't have cable enough to enjoy like the 91 to 93 run. Obviously, I knew about it, but you know, we had ABC, NBC, CBS, and BBS where I was living at the time, which is right down the road from you. And so I didn't really get to watch the games and stuff, but the 96 through 98 run that they had, man, I mean, I watched every game. Yeah, I've never been more involved in an actual sport than I was in basketball from around the time I was probably 8 to about the time that I was 13 or 14, whenever Jordan retired.
Yeah.
And, you and I've talked about this before, love the Magic. Mm-hmm. I was a huge Penny Hardaway fan, love Shaq. But man, just Jordan, Pippen, and I was, for me, Rodman was my guy. And I think it's just because like I was a god awful like shooter when I played basketball, but I was pretty good at defense. Like even as small as I am, like I could get some, I would fight and get rebounds and stuff. And so Rodman was my guy during that run. But obviously, I mean, Jordan's Jordan. But it was just a lot of fun to relive those moments and to be able to go back and see some stuff that I had read about, but didn't, you know, at the time didn't have the opportunity to look at footage or anything for. So it was great. Matter of fact, that'll probably be the thing that, like, if I'm doing some work on my computer or I want to wind down after the day and just want to throw something on, like, I'm just going to put that documentary back on.
I think that's very reasonable. The thing I wish they would do is go back. I don't know if you watched that final game that they did with Jordan hitting the game winner against Utah in his final mm-hmm. championship, but I wish they would do that with, like, I don't know, pick eight games from that era and just whoever wants to can give kind of a director's commentary on it as we watch it.
Mm-hmm.
That would get me signed back up for Netflix.
Yeah, man. I remember that series like it happened last week.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm kicking myself that living so close to where you did, I wasn't a better friend to invite you to come over. I've mentioned on here before, we had the big, huge, massive manual movement satellite dish in our yard. And so I remember chasing Bulls games across the sky, finding random feeds and whatnot. I should have been a better friend and invited you over.
Oh, man. No, you're fine. It's no big deal. I was happy to be able to see it when I saw, you know, when I got the chance to see it. It is amazing to me. I guess sometimes I just take for granted that I've lived in the same space that Michael Jordan got to play professional basketball and do it better than anyone has ever done it before.
Yeah.
You know, and that was in my lifetime.
Yeah.
It just going back and watching those games and stuff, my uncle told me, he's like, oh, I thought Jordan came across like a butthole in that thing. I was like, ah, man, I think he's just ultra competitive. Like, mm-hmm. and that's what made him the best ever, is he took it more serious than anyone else did. And he aspired to a level of greatness that few can ever attain. If anyone can ever attain.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would add to that is I've gotten to see Michael Jordan and LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
And as a basketball fan, that's a super privilege. I think, you know, if somebody asks me who's greater, I'm going to go to the element you just described and say LeBron is an incredibly focused individual, probably in the top 1% of all of humanity in history. But Jordan is in a tier by himself. And so I think Jordan's commitment to win at all costs is nearly psychopathic. And LeBron is probably a healthier human being.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I've said this other places. Jordan is the closest thing we have to the idea that Batman could exist.
Yeah.
He's the basketball Batman. Everything is about basketball. And so I think Jordan's superior. I think it's probably not particularly great for him as a human being, but that's what made him what he was. And that's what we celebrated and cheered, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the Ric Flair effect. Like, yeah, it's probably not really great for him to be fed positive reinforcement for the choices he's making, but we did.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of greatness that is honestly attributable there. There's just a lot of downside to it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very well said. I think the biggest thing for me was how he would take the smallest things that would slight him.
Mm-hmm.
And then that would be his focus for like the next game. Like the one game where the guy came up to him, he was having a bad game, and the guy came up to him and said, "Hey, MJ, good game." Like, put his arm around him.
Yeah.
And then they're like, and then I've never seen another man target another man like Jordan did that kid.
Yeah. I mean, again, probably not a super healthy individual, right?
But yeah.
That singular minded devotion to winning at all costs is what made him in a category by himself. Again, even as a guy who really loves LeBron James.
Yeah. It reminded me of that moment in The Waterboy where he's like, "Best of luck to you on the upcoming play." And the guy's like, "I'll be playing with your mama tonight." And Bobby goes, "62.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of. I was like, that's Jordan. That's Michael Jordan.
100%.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it was great. It got dusty a couple times in here watching it, you know, when he was, especially when he was on the floor after winning the 96 NBA Finals mm-hmm. and he didn't have his dad with him anymore. You know, he's on the floor, just crying on that basketball. That got me. There's a couple different times where like Jordan gets emotional in it, and I was like, oh dang, I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was amazing. And it's amazing to me just like how much of an icon Michael Jordan was. It's something that we don't really, you see it with LeBron, but it was just different with Jordan. You know, it was a different time period. There wasn't social media, I love the way he dealt with the media. I love the way that, you know, he would joke around with them and stuff. And I just feel like you don't see that much anymore.
Yeah. Now the reality is I think the media did protect him a bit.
Sure.
Sam Smith was the guy who kind of broke that barrier. But the media did protect him. The thing that's amazing to me is how famous he was when we couldn't check his Instagram every day.
Yeah.
We didn't have TMZ following him around. You know, I guess for me, that's the closest thing I can relate to in terms of the Beatles and the phenomenon they were, because this wasn't mass. I mean, there was mass media, but not compared to today. We didn't have social media influencers back then. And yet everybody in the world wanted to get just in the same zip code as him.
Yeah. 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 Not everyone had a camera in their pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great, man. It's great. And the only thing that I'm upset about is that I waited so long to watch it.
Yeah. I'm glad you did. Maybe we need to find time to off air, just kind of rehash and enjoy the goodness of that doc. It was great, man. It was such a, and it was at such a perfect time. Like I needed something like that during the quarantine, you know, when I watched it, when it first rolled. So I have nothing but good things to say about that doc.
Yeah. I know the reason why I didn't watch it while it was going on was because I knew that I would watch one episode and then I wouldn't want to wait another week to watch another one.
Sure.
So I knew that I was waiting until it was all available, you know, to be able to watch it. But, then things got crazy at work and I just didn't have the time. And so I'm just glad that, I took the last couple of days to sit down and crank that thing out. And dang you, Netflix. Dang you for taking my money. After I thought, just when I thought I got out, they pulled me back in.
Yeah. Wait till they drop that Bly Manor on you, bud.
Yeah. And I mean, that was another thing. I was like, well, Bly Manor comes out in 2 weeks. So yeah. I might as well just keep it for right now. And that Sherlock Holmes sister movie just came out yesterday that I was interested in with Henry Cavill and Millie Bobby Brown. So I'll probably watch that sometime this week and whatever. Netflix.
Friggin' Netflix. I'm sure I'll be back someday. I'm holding out, but someday I'm sure I'll be back.
Yeah. So anyway, sorry about the detour on that, but I wanted to talk to you about it and I forget what triggered it, but I was like, oh yeah, I got to tell Jeff I watched The Last Dance.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah. So, WandaVision will be coming out later this year, I think. And then the last trailer that I have for you is called The Wolf of Snow Hollow.
Oh, okay.
And the synopsis on it is this: terror grips a small mountain town as bodies are discovered after each full moon. Losing sleep, raising a teenage daughter, and caring for his ailing father, Officer Marshall struggles to remind himself there is no such thing as werewolves.
Huh. And what platform or delivery mechanism is going to have this one?
I don't know. It says that it's released on October the 9th, which is a Friday. So I think it might actually wind up being in theaters.
Well, how about that?
Yeah.
Delightful.
Yeah. And also, this is Robert Forster's last movie.
Oh, well, I have to go see that then, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Do you know, you know who Robert Forster is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fantastic character actor. And I didn't realize that he had done anything else after like the El Camino movie.
You know, I don't think I saw El Camino.
It was the Breaking Bad movie on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not a Breaking Bad watcher.
Oh yeah. I forget that you're weird like that.
I am weird like that. And that's correct. I don't mean that as in any way facetious. I'm weird. The thing with Robert Forster is I don't know why he didn't have the same career Warren Beatty did. He has that perfect American square jawed look. And as a young man, I mean, what did he not bring to the table that Beatty did? I really don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good call. You know, I forgot that he was in Heroes.
Was he really? I'd forgotten that too. It's been so long, man. Yeah. That show got so bad after the first season, and then I just cut ties.
Yeah, yeah. He was the dad, Arthur Petrelli. I think he might have been in like a coma or something the first season, and then he came out of it. But he was the two brothers' dad, the guy that was like the mayor or whatever, and then Milo, whatever his last name is, like that was his big first breakout. I'm doing a great job describing all this.
that show, Milo, the cheerleader, which why can't I remember her name? Because I want her to come back from the dead to reinvigorate Scream.
Yeah, Hayden Panettiere.
There you go. And yeah. Zachary Quinto. Like, heroes yes. launched them all.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, he was in that. But yeah, man, the trailer for this looks good. It's written and directed and stars a gentleman by the name of Jim Cummings, who, for you Disney buffs out there, there is a Jim Cummings that voices Goofy that I thought was, or maybe he doesn't voice Goofy, but he voices some Disney characters. And I was like, the dude that voices the Winnie the Pooh is doing this movie. but no, his big claim to fame is I think it's a 2018 movie called Thunder Road. Have you heard of Thunder Road?
I mean, I know the song. I've right. heard of the movie.
Yeah. So apparently, it was like a dramedy, and that's what he's known for. And I guess he writes and directs and stars and all of his stuff. So,
Okay.
Yeah. He's the white Tyler Perry.
Cool. Good for him.
Yeah. But yeah, so this thing comes out in 2 weeks.
Okay.
I'll throw the trailer up in the Facebook group. That way, if people want to take a gander at it, they can, just to see if it's something that interests them. But, I'm in. So if this thing comes to my local cinema, I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I've been to the theater twice and I finally went and saw Tenet.
Oh, what'd you think about it?
I mean, it's a spectacle. You know, there's so many different set pieces that are incredible. Pattinson gave me hope that he could be Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I really am not someone who has a hard time following plots, but I mean, I know the beats of the movie and I know how the plot advances, but I still can't get my head around the inversion principle.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to watch it again, and I want to watch it again with closed captioning on.
Yeah.
So I need to read the movie, I think, to understand it.
Yeah, that is the one thing that bugged me, was how it seems like since The Dark Knight, really, his movies are they get hard to hear.
Yeah.
You know, that was the big thing when probably 9 months before The Dark Knight Rises came out, Big Al and I got tickets to see the prologue. And I forget how I went on. I think I went on some website and reserved them, but we wound up going to Opry Mills in Nashville and watching the 6 minute prologue. So we drove 2 hours from Chattanooga for 6 minutes of this movie. And it was worth every bit of it. But the thing about it was you could barely understand what Bane was saying.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, dude, if this is how he's going to talk through the whole movie, that's going to be upsetting. And they wound up, you know, editing it and making it more clear. But even still, like, at some points you had difficult understanding what Bane was saying.
Yeah.
And then it just feels like it's gotten worse with every movie. But yeah, I thought it was good, but there's a lot of mixed reactions about it. And I'm with you. I'd like to watch it again, but I think I'll probably wait until I can watch it in the comfort of my home with like the closed captioning on, so I can make sure that I can follow along.
Yeah, I think it will enhance the viewing. I think it's totally a theater movie. I think Nolan does that intentionally, and it's clear in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that I need the closed captioning to understand it. So
yeah,
another reason to watch it on home video.
Yeah. And also kudos to John David Washington. I thought he did a great job as well.
Sure, man. Sure. He's really good. I couldn't help but think of James Harden. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was like, James Harden's doing an action movie and doing a darn good job.
Yeah.
But that's a good look, man. The bearded action hero. Let's go.
Yep. For sure. He was on Ballers. That was where I first learned about him.
Oh, really? I didn't watch that one.
Yeah. That's the Rocks TV show on HBO.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So. It was okay. I didn't watch it religiously. As a matter of fact, I'll probably go back now that it's over. I'll probably go back and try to watch it and finish it. But, the stuff I saw, I thought was fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of a football Entourage. If you ever watched the old Entourage TV series, that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. I can see that as a good premise. I kind of feel like this has turned into, what Jeff doesn't watch, but maybe I should remedy that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, definitely Breaking Bad, but I understand.
I mean, I got no argument. Everybody loves Breaking Bad. I get it.
Yeah. So, all right, man. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition of
Jeff Hates Trailers.
Yeah, it's kind of a lighter week for
this week's horror report.
But here's what I got for you, man. And in some ways, this kind of overlaps. I can't remember if we have talked about this extensively, but apparently Blumhouse and Amazon have released every one of their trailers for the films that Blumhouse is putting on Amazon.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we've got Black Box, Evil Eye, The Lie, and Nocturne. So those are all available to watch. You can find them, you know, on your favorite streaming platform. They've also attached this conversation with Blum and Jamie Lee Curtis, who do a Q&A with each filmmaker.
Ooh.
So we're getting ready to get a bunch of Blumhouse content. And for those of you who love the creative process and getting a chance, you know, to see what's going on behind the curtain, well, Blumhouse and Amazon have dropped a whole chunk of that.
Okay.
And that's about all I got to say on that. It's just more of a heads up. I'm not going to watch any of the trailers because I'm sure I'll watch the movies, but they're there.
Excuse me. Well, cool, man. Yeah. I have to check some of those out.
You can find these at a couple different places. Entertainment Weekly has a tweet about it that's easy to find via Google. HeyYouGuys.com has a Welcome to the Blumhouse Trailers post that has all of them linked to and whatnot. So throw it in a Google machine. Find yourself some good trailers to watch. We got horror content coming, baby.
Woo! Goog it.
Goog it indeed. So speaking of good things coming, we got news that Stranger Things Season 4 is set to resume production, and they are starting in 4 days, September 28th.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, so I guess this thing shut down in March due to the pandemic, and we've kind of all been waiting for them to get their butts back in gear so we can find out what happened to Hopper and the crew, and that's going to take place in just a couple of days, which makes me think, I don't know, maybe we can get a 2021 air date that's earlier rather than later.
Yeah, that would be good, man. I hope that that's the case. I could definitely see this thing being, the big summer thing for Netflix next year.
Oh yeah, yeah. We could use a win. I just hope we get there.
Yeah.
I don't mean to get too bleak or depressing on this, but we've sort of made allusions to this in recent months. I wonder if I'll live to see if basically society will live to see September 28th.
Yeah.
And so I kind of just want to know what's going on with Hooper. And could you please just rush this into delivery?
Yeah.
That's what I need.
Yeah. We need to know about Hopper, and we need to know what's going on with these kids.
Yep. 100%.
Hey, we've survived almost one apocalyptic episode every month this year. So just 12 more. Just 12 more. We get new Stranger Things content. So
let's go.
I, for one, welcome our alien overlords.
Well, Derek, like I said, it's kind of a light edition of
this week's horror report.
So, are you ready to pull the curtain on 2015's Poltergeist remake?
Yeah, my man. Let's do it up.
Should we call in Mark?
We should. Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert. I think the thing that stands out most about this remake to me, Derek, is something that I feel like I say fairly often, but it's even more true for this film. I forgot how much talent was in this. I knew Rockwell, but man, this is full of heavy hitters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I went to the IMDb page before I watched the movie just because I was like, I don't remember anybody else in this thing. Except for, you know, obviously for Sam Rockwell. And you go to, you know, Rosemary DeWitt, and then you said Jared Harris. And I was like, holy smokes. I completely forgot that Jared Harris was in this and playing the Zelda Rubinstein role.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So, I mean, there's a plethora of really great talent in this. And I will say this, and you may disagree with me on it, and that's fine. But I really thought that Rosemary DeWitt and Sam Rockwell had so much more chemistry than Craig T. Nelson and the lady playing his wife did in the original Poltergeist movie.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you agree. I don't feel like either one of them really was fully utilized, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there was a lot of meat left on the bone, which is certainly true for Jared Harris too. But as a couple, they clearly had something that the previous couple was lacking. And I assume that that has something to do with being within three generations of each other's birth date. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised that Sam Rockwell and Miss DeWitt can pull that off, but they definitely did.
Yeah. Yeah. They feel like a suburban family.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the many plot holes in this movie. The one thing that came across is like this entire family feels like your next door neighbors.
Yeah, I guess I do have a bit of pushback there. You're not wrong that they do feel like your neighbors, but like the ones that maybe life has gotten too difficult for this season.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but like Sam Rockwell, but I also felt like we got so little time with this family. And most of the time we got with them was focused on their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Money's tight. They're laid off. They've had to move into a dumpier neighborhood. Their snob neighbors are commenting on it. The kids feel neglected and, you know, in some ways maybe are being neglected because of the demands on the family. I just felt like they weren't. They felt more realistic, but they also felt less charming. Does that make sense?
It does. I don't mean to take this in a dark place, but like, I guess it just reminded me of my family when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And so I see your point. I see what you're saying. But like, I specifically remember situations where like we didn't have enough money for food, but my stepdad would go buy a guitar.
Dude, that's a lot darker than dad coming home with presents for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And my mom would be like, what's going on? We don't have money for food. And he's like, yeah, but look at this Gibson I just bought. So I guess in those, sorry, man, I forget that my childhood was a lot darker than most people's.
It's okay. I'm going to chew on some of these Xanax right here and just make it all better.
Yeah. 2020 ain't got nothing on me, man. I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I definitely, when you're talking about it, I see what you're saying. For me, I was like, yeah, it feels like my childhood.
Yeah, and I don't want to deny that it's realistic.
Yeah.
It's just we didn't get enough time with them on things that didn't suck and things that weren't filled with conflict. Like I wanted to see a roasting marshmallows or
sure,
basically dad hanging out with the kids when he wasn't having to like justify his choice to spend all their money on toys and pizza.
Yeah, or protect them from the tree monsters.
Yeah, sure. That too, for sure. I mean, I kind of feel like that idea that this movie is probably, it's got more talent in it. In some ways, now the people behind the camera aren't nearly as talented, but it probably had more money spent on it. And it's kind of an effective, like, haunted house movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel like something was lost between Spielberg and 2015. And what I feel like was lost was a lot of the charm. I just didn't come away as, I don't want to say stirred. That sounds grandiose, but like I didn't enjoy the ride as much.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's totally accurate. This movie is a inferior version of the original. It feels like, that they tried to do a couple different things to make it different and in those ruins what the original was going for.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, I don't know if it this squares with what you felt like, but it seemed like the point was to hit the major beats of the original rather than to make a compelling movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think they made one really good update and one really horrendous update. I don't know if that squares with where you want to take the conversation or not, but that it kind of gets to why I think what I do about this film.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I thought the scene where the snarky tech gets his arm pulled into the closet,
mm-hmm.
and then the drill was coming through, I actually thought that was a better version of that scene where the guy pulls his face off. And I get it that like practical effects people and film historian people will probably want to beat me to death for that, but it just worked better for me. So I thought that was good. I thought they actually improved with that swap. I think it was a catastrophic mistake to fly the drone into the upside down.
Yeah.
And that CGI is awful.
Yeah, it is
absolutely
terrible.
Awful. If I could re-edit this movie, we would just watch the kid piloting the drone. And the only footage we would see in the upside down is a brief silhouette of the sister saying the, you know, saying mom or whatever before the drone gets smacked down. And that would be all we would do in the upside down. I thought that was, I mean, it's something we've talked about a lot. Your imagination's just always going to be scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly when the CGI, I mean, that really isn't that old. I mean, a lot has changed in technology since 2015, but we can also go find decent CGI from 2015. That it was just, I mean, it took me right out. I just thought, yeah, okay, we're in a video game all of a sudden, and it's not a particularly interesting one.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it. I felt like that this one had a lot more, I guess plot holes really is the way to look at it.
Yeah, well, walk us through them.
Well, I think the biggest one for me was how is a guy that's going to be out of work and a stay-at-home mom going to get any kind of bank loan to buy a house, regardless of if it's, you know, in foreclosure or the price has dropped or whatever the situation is. It just, that to me was the biggest one where I was just like, well, this doesn't make any sense at all.
I thought their financial situation was a big problem to the story as well. Yeah. I think I've stepped on you there, but I've got some sympathetic follow-up.
Well, just as someone who is looking to probably purchase his first home, like it's weighing on my mind.
Sure.
And so did they go to Save with Conrad? Because whoever their mortgage guy is, I want to talk to him.
Yeah, he got him the hookup. I don't know if they ever really addressed that effectively in the story or not. Maybe they're downsizing and so sold a better home to step into that one. But like, if that's the case, I just wonder how they're living at all. You know what I mean? Like, where she's a writer who we never see write.
Right.
And he's just straight up out of a job and openly campaigning for one at dinner parties. How did they buy groceries that month? And I'm thinking about 2015. Like, things were tough in 2015. There's a lot of property that could be had for cheap in 2015.
Yeah.
I think we have talked about The Big Short on here before. So, I mean, there's some elements of that, but groceries weren't a depressed market. And,
right.
You know, car payments weren't, or van payments weren't. So I do feel like they were just like, tough financial situation. Don't ask too many questions. Let's move along.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, just that I think Poltergeist is a critique of like suburban safetyism. You know what I mean? Move out to the suburbs. Everything's safe out there. I think the original Poltergeist, what I'm talking about here, wanted to ask questions about suburbia, and it wanted to ask questions about kind of technology. What's TV going to do to our lives? Although that's not directly there as much as the suburbia thing. And that works better if the family is doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, the dad's making some bank. He's important to his company. When suburbia is not a safe place because dad has been laid off, the threat level is reduced, I guess, in some ways. So I just thought it was a change that was like, let's be topical, but undercut the movie they were clearly trying to replicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Also, I didn't understand how it took him, what, 3 credit cards to pay for the stuff he's paying for at the grocery, but then he goes out and buys like a ring or a pendant or whatever for his wife and a new phone for the daughter and stuff like that for the kids. I was just like, what did you sell the van? Like, what did you refinance the house? Like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess I felt like that it was unnecessary to have them struggle so much. And then to also have to, I mean, essentially it's what you were saying earlier. Like, it was just weird to see them struggle so much and then have to go through this as well. I guess that's one of the reasons why Paranormal Activity always went with rich people who didn't seem to have any problems. And now, you know, their big problem is a specter.
Yeah. The literal ghosts that they've built their lives on top of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt rushed. It felt like we didn't get enough time with the family in positive moments.
Yeah.
And that they really wanted to pay off this big CGI thing that fell flat. I'm not a guy who just assumes the remake is going to be worse, but man, this is pronounced in decline, you know?
Yeah.
Which is crazy with all the talent. Like they had, they had all stars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a murderer's row, man, for sure. And it's unfortunate. But again, I mean, you're looking at Sam Raimi instead of Steven Spielberg. You're looking at a guy that I've never heard of before instead of Tobe Hooper.
Yeah.
Like, and granted, that's not everything, you know, but this movie feels disconnected, disjointed. The resolution comes out of nowhere and doesn't feel like there's high stakes in this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're arguing with each other about who's going to go in to save the kid. And then all of a sudden the brother goes in and then there's no like, there's no tension. There's no anything. It's over. He saves a little girl and it's done. And you're like, what? That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make sense that Jared Harris's character is alive at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
It also feels real tacked on that Jared Harris's character and the doctor are in love. And also why she goes and why she becomes like a little schoolgirl when Jared Harris is around. That didn't make any sense to me either. You have a tremendous amount of talent. In my opinion, you know, we've talked about this before. Sam Rockwell is probably, if not the greatest, one of the greatest actors of this generation. And I feel like he gets wasted here. Like he's still Sam Rockwell. He still does an amazing job. And for me, he's the entire reason to watch this movie. But there's not much else. There's not much else of reasons to watch this movie besides Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, I think my initial reaction to Rockwell in this is that I didn't like his character.
Mm.
And I realized, I think in reflection, that he's probably doing more than the movie deserves.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just saw him as a jerk who was too passive. But now, thinking about it, getting ready for the episode, my assumption is he knows I'm playing a guy who's basically a dude bro. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the guy who's going to grill and throw football and, you know, and not the way I'm criticizing, by the way, calls his son Bud and Pal, which I call my sons Bud and Pal, right? Yeah. Like he is the all-American suburban dad, but he's been laid off. He doesn't know how to care for his family or provide for them. He feels inadequate as a result. He's scrambling for the means to kind of regain agency in his life. And then this ghost thing happens and just replicates all of those problems.
Yeah.
So I think like by the time he's, I can't remember where in exactly he we're at in the plot and he's who he's talking to, but he kind of breaks down crying and says, we just want our daughter back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, okay. So he's playing this with layers, but the movie rushes us past it so quickly
mm-hmm.
that I could only kind of come to that conclusion thinking back on the film. And then you put Jared Harris up there who, you know, I'm like you, Sam Rockwell's one of the greatest of his generation. I don't feel like Jared Harris gives anything up to him in terms of acting chops.
Right.
But he just plays a goofball. You know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
I've used the analogy before on the podcast, but you've got this Ferrari over here and you're driving it through a neighborhood full of speed bumps. Like get that thing out on the track, man.
Yep.
So I don't know that this movie, if it had come out and it wasn't connected to Poltergeist and we'd never seen Poltergeist, I wouldn't like it better.
Mm-hmm.
But having seen Poltergeist, I feel like you just, what you had the opportunity to be stronger on, which is your cast, you just left them idling on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And what time we got with them, you rushed us through because you wanted to send a drone into Scary Town. Those are not good choices.
Yeah.
The other one that you hit on earlier, in the original Poltergeist for the original audience, this house is clean. And they go outside and then the house clearly is not clean. That's like a big twist and surprise. And it ramps up the emotional drama really fast. Here again, they just wanted to replicate the movie woodenly. And so when the family goes out to go to the hotel, I'm waiting for the hammer to fall. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like they've got to make some choices that are different beyond having the tech guy face a drill.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to kind of give me the Poltergeist story, come up with a creative way for the family to be put back in jeopardy.
Yeah.
So let them get to the hotel, right? Let them get off the property, because if you're just going to do paint by numbers, recreating the original film, all that dramatic tension is completely evaporated.
Mm-hmm. Or even show them buying another house, and the very last thing you see is like the TV flicking on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. What's that like stuffed pig doll that she likes? Mm-hmm. Watch it get sucked into the closet. Something.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, something different.
Yeah.
And I don't like different for different sake. I'm just saying that so much of the impact of the original was built on, oh no, the house is definitely not okay. And the family's still very much in danger, that this movie just telegraphs it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it pokes fun at the original without giving you any new material to justify the poking fun. You know, when they're at that dinner party, and the guy's like, well, at least it's not an ancient burial ground.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, way to be on the nose. Like, not only are you calling out a superior movie, but you're doing it in a way that shows your flaws. Like, that's not good storytelling.
For sure. It you know, it's the brat kid who doesn't realize he's criticizing his betters.
Yeah.
You know, it's like basically middle school inserted into a movie scene.
Yeah, good call.
It also reminded me that, oh, I'm watching a lesser movie. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, it's a callback to like, hey, remember there's a better movie of this that you've seen already?
Yeah.
Which is a strange choice. Yeah, that's a good point, Derek.
And I feel like don't try to point out the flaws of something that's superior than you while you're in the middle of your own flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
for sure.
I guess that's a more modern version of the don't talk about the splinter in your brother's eye when you got the blank in yours.
For sure. Good comparison, my friend. Do you think this movie is weakened by us having seen The Conjuring and Sinister? Like, we had scary haunted house movies already
mm-hmm.
in the revival of kind of not big money, but fairly high money horror movies in the early 2010s. Do you think that... Does this film suffer because we saw better versions of even this style of movie in recent memory when it came out?
Probably. But I also feel like that this movie, even if we hadn't seen those, this movie is going to be inferior. If Poltergeist had never come out in 1982 and we're watching this movie today or 5 years ago, I still think that I tell you all the criticisms that I have for it right now. Just because it's a poorly made movie. And what I mean by that is, like, in terms of the script, in terms of fleshing out characters, in terms of the shoddy CGI with the drone. I just don't think that this is a good movie, even when you don't have anything to compare it to.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is at best a sci-fi made for TV movie. Like, this is the kind of movie I think of. This shouldn't have been a blockbuster. Like, well, I say blockbuster. This shouldn't have been a wide release theatrical movie. This could have been easily done on Amazon Prime or Hulu or with the Sharknado movies on Sci-Fi. And I think that I may have given it more of the benefit of the doubt if it had been like that than what it is right here. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. I think those movies I mentioned work as an indictment of Poltergeist to say you could have made something better. And I think that this must have been somebody in a studio thinking, we have this really important property. Let's just rush it into production to, like, make another buck off of it rather than mm-hmm. trying to honor the original.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like you, if this is what you're going to do, I would actually not just release it to a streaming platform. I'd just give it a different name.
Yeah.
And let everybody be like, huh, that's a fairly effective remake of Poltergeist.
Yeah.
And just let that be the narrative around the film rather than slapping the Poltergeist title on it. Because this, it's worse than like generic brand. It's a knockoff of a knockoff and something got lost.
Yeah. It is definitely, it's the Mr. Thunder to Dr. Thunder, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. What, excuse me, what was like Prometheus Wasn't that Ridley Scott's alien movie that wasn't Alien?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do something like that.
Sure.
Where after it's released, everybody goes, oh, snap, that was kind of a Poltergeist remake.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Not that good, but it's a Poltergeist remake. Instead of just branding it like, hey, we're going to hit all the normal beats that you know, but we're going to change some stuff, and it's not going to be good. But come on down.
But we got this killer drone CGI stuff. Woo-hoo-hoo. Yeah.
But hey, we got Sam Rockwell, and we've got Jared Harris, who, you know, and Rosemary DeWitt, both coming off of incredible turns in Mad Men. So, you know, you want to come out and see this movie.
I mean, to make all things about the 80s, since that's where the original originated, this is New Coke.
Yeah, good call. I wouldn't even say it's New Coke. I'd say it's Clear Pepsi.
That's better. That's like, better. Yeah, because they think it's impressive that they've done these modifications that they have. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not happy about it.
Sam Rockwell, Jared Harris, Rosemary DeWitt, they deserve better.
Yeah, for sure. And I am so much of a masochist that I watched the extended version of this thing. So I got about 8 minutes more than what you probably got, unless Good. You watched it too.
Good for you. I actually don't know. I don't know. Do you know what the 8 minutes were?
Just a bunch of like longer versions of stuff.
Gotcha.
I couldn't even tell. I mean, granted, I only saw this movie once in theaters.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
When it first came out, and so I couldn't pinpoint anything. But like I'm on a website right now that shows like the time indexes from the theatrical version to the extended cut, uh-huh. And it's really nothing of importance. I think there may be one more jump scare or something. And by the way, let's put that out there too. Like, this movie relies heavily on stupid jump scares. Like, I know that we talked about how the first one, watching it now, you know, almost 40 years later, feels like a family comedy.
Yeah.
But I imagine that in 82, it was scary, right? It was terrifying to think that there might be some kind of entity that could suck your children through the television. This one just relies heavily on jump scares and doesn't try to fill you with dread or try to fill you with fear. It just goes, oh, here's something. Ha 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 ha. And now let's go on to the next thing. And dude, I know we've talked about this before, but those are my least favorite kinds of scary movies.
Sure. Sure. You know, maybe I shouldn't have wished for them to do something different with the house is still a danger, because I think the perfect epitome of what you're talking about is where they're like, oh, the clown scene. Let's turn that into a jump scare that the kid, mm-hmm. in a way that no child would ever do, who's afraid of the closet on a dark and stormy night, goes and pulls on a mysterious chain in his closet.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of one clown, we'll give you a ton of clowns. And yeah. This clown will have creepy eyes once the kid kicks his face off. Like, maybe I should just say, actually, these people don't know how to make improvements or riff on a good theme. So just be thankful they didn't try harder.
Yeah. Yeah. I really don't understand why this movie was made.
Cheap cash in, man.
Yeah, for sure. I've never heard of Gil Keenan, who's the director of this thing.
For good reason.
I guess he did a movie called City of Ember. He also directed the animated version, or the animated movie called Monster House, that came out in 2006. He apparently is writing the Ghostbusters movie. So that terrifies me.
Yeah, that just brought me down a peg.
Yeah. I guess he and Jason Reitman are taking the credit on that. But yeah, I never want him to ever have the ability to make another movie.
Maybe a different genre. Maybe just get out of horror.
Yeah. Or keep doing animated stuff. Monster House was decent.
Dude, my kids love Monster House. It's great.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of horror for kids I like that doesn't condescend. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I'm game for that too.
But don't stop using talented people for bad movies. So let's see. This thing had a budget of $35 million. It opening weekend made $22.6 million. Its domestic gross was $47.4 million. Its worldwide gross was $95.4 million. So doubled its budget. So it's it's a success financially.
Which means we'll get another one eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. But good Lord, what, $35 million? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Some of that stuff looks like the Sharknadoes. in this movie. What, how are you?
That's yet again spot on.
Like, what are you using that money? I mean, I know, you know, again, this is before Sam Rockwell was a Academy Award winning actor. So I don't think he's drawn huge money for this thing. And I don't think that Jared Harris can put a big price tag on himself. I don't know, man. It feels like, you know what? Hey, good for Gil Keenan.
Sure.
He was able to make some money making something that he may not have much control over. You know, just because you directed something doesn't mean that it's going to, you know, we've constantly heard stuff about the Star Wars movies. You know, I mean, we're seeing it right now with the Snyder cut of Justice League. Sometimes you direct stuff and it doesn't come out the way you want it to.
Yeah.
So
pencil pushers got a hold of it. That's true. Maybe we shouldn't be so hard on the director.
Yeah. But seriously, Gil Keenan never do anything else ever again. I'm tapped out on this one, man. You got anything else you want to talk about?
No. I just think there was meat left on the bone and it could have been better. And it's disappointing that they tried a remake that was handled so sloppily.
Yeah. This did win an award at the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards in 2016.
That makes me suspect of those awards.
It shouldn't, because the award that it won was Worst Film of the Year.
Oh, never mind. I've upgraded my evaluation of the awards.
Yeah. So well done, Chainsaw Awards.
Yes, you have spoken truth to power.
Yeah, for sure. So let's do it, man. First and foremost, did we see something scary?
Horror Uncle here, yes. I thought the drill scene was effective.
Okay.
And I think something that is a regular refrain here, if there's somebody who just wants a scary movie for a dark and stormy night to, as a, you know, excuse to snuggle up with your loved one, this will do that probably.
Sure. Can I say that I thought the drill scene was the worst part of this movie? I really did.
This is the first time I thought you'd been wrong on the episode. So
yeah, that's fine.
That's how I'll score that.
Yeah, that's fine. But I was like, this is ridiculous. You know what? Screw it. I'll say it too. We did see something scary. I think that for you and I, especially for me, I think that I become real cynical by watching these movies so often that there's not a lot anymore that's going to make me go, oh, that was genuinely scary.
Sure.
Just because we've seen everything now. Or it feels like we've seen everything now.
Yeah.
So, but I think that you're right. I think that if you go to watch this movie in a crowded movie theater, which obviously we won't be doing anymore ever, or if it is a dark and stormy night and you and your partner want to curl up on the couch and watch something, I think you're going to genuinely get a couple jump scares out of this thing that may catch you. And so while I roll my eyes at most of that stuff anymore, for the person that doesn't watch at least one horror movie a week, I think you probably would find something scary of this. So yes, we did.
Look at you, big hearted fella.
Yeah, I'm learning, man. It only took me 4 years, but I'm getting there. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rank this?
I am going to give this movie a 4.
Okay.
And here's why. Mr. Witt. Mm-hmm. Jane Addams, who I think is phenomenal and just she handles her role so well, but she's just on the sideline. Mm-hmm. Jared Harris and Sam Rockwell.
Okay.
And those are the 4 positive points I can give this movie.
That's fair. I am going to give this movie a 2.5 solely based on Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
I think that everyone else in this thing is wasted.
Yeah. I mean, he is too, really.
Yeah,
we just got more of him than, you know, less was wasted with him.
He is. But I also feel like that Sam Rockwell is the, as wasted as his talent is, I feel like that his character is the one character that is actually fleshed out in this movie.
Yeah, for sure.
And as much as I like Rosemary DeWitt, her character, I mean, you could do this movie without her and mm-hmm. it wouldn't be anything.
Mm-hmm. She's not vital.
Yeah. She's not. And she's not given anything to do except to have great chemistry with Sam Rockwell. That's it.
Kind of wring her hands and look distressed.
Yeah. A little pensive, but that's all.
Yeah.
And I love Jared Harris. You know, you and I have talked about our love for Jared Harris and things like Chernobyl and Sherlock Holmes, Game of Shadows, Mad Men, et cetera, et cetera. Jared Harris is normally great in everything he does. But again, you remember Mr. Deeds? You remember watching that movie?
Mm-hmm.
And he plays like the tabloid, the head of the tabloid thing where Winona Ryder's character works for, and she's trying to get this story on Deeds.
Yep.
He plays this part like that guy.
Yeah, sure.
And I never thought that I'd needed more Max Stinnett in my life. I think that's his name. Maybe not. I just never thought that I needed more of Jared Harris playing like this sleazy tabloid guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course we think he sacrifices himself for the greater good after, you know, exposing himself as a fraud in this thing. He's finally, Mac McGrath is his name in Mr. Deeds. Max Stinnett was actually a director of silent films back in the 20s. I was way off. But anyway, he's just, I mean, he feels like he's the same person, just with more neutral good than neutral evil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a waste of his time and talent. So yeah, 2.5. I say all that to say 2.5 for the movie.
Listener, if you haven't and you want to see Jared Harris do something really good in the horror genre, go find season 1 of AMC's The Terror.
Yeah. Yeah. Or depending on your thoughts on the 60s and capitalism, go watch Mad Men.
That's fair.
So anyway, you heard what Jeff and I thought about the movie. What did you think about the movie? Let us know. The best way to do that would be to join our Facebook group. We saw something scary. And be a part of the conversation on that. To those of you who have joined recently, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And let your friends know, and let's keep growing that group. You can also do us a huge solid and go on Apple Podcasts and rate and review. Give us those 5-star reviews. That'll help more people to find our podcast, and we can grow our listeners from that. And then, of course, if you want to partner with us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/scarypodcast. And be a part of that. And we've got 4 different tiers. 3 of those tiers will get you your bonus episode for the month, which Jeff and I will be recording sometime next week. So very excited about that. I think that's everything, right?
I believe so, sir. You've served us well.
All right. Good deal. Well, hey, we're going to get out of here. He's at Ride Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. And we're out of time. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this week's episode. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. But until then, this is your horror uncles telling you to stay away from clowns and sewers, blind men with turkey basters, and white people with teacups. We'll see you guys back here next week. Bye-bye, man.